Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Illinois has lost nearly 8,000 manufacturing jobs this year. This is the second year in a row that Illinois has lost the most manufacturing jobs in the Midwestern region. We're going to talk about that a little bit on the 21st today, and specifically what small towns do when the major employer in its area packs up and leaves. Later on, we're also going to be having a conversation with Crane Chicago business manufacturing reporter Claire Bushy about sort of how manufacturing is doing throughout the state. But we wanted to start with the town of Casey, Illinois. The small East Central Illinois town has about less than 3,000 residents. When two manufacturing plants left the area in 2007, the economic impact was devastating. But 4 years after that, one idea has helped turn the town's economy around as they turn to tourism. We're joined on the phone now by Jim Bolin, who helped Casey tap into the tourism market. Jim, thanks for joining us on the 21st. Welcome.
You're welcome. Thank you for asking.
Jim, maybe you can start by taking me back to 2007. You're a businessman in Casey. What was it like when those two manufacturing plants left?
Well, it was, you've seen a lot of families scratching their head trying to figure out what they're going to do next. We're a town of 3,000, and I believe the numbers was close to 350 to 400 jobs left in them.
Wow.
2 years, and
yeah.
that's just was devastating for the community and the families.
And how did you come up with an idea of this? How did you come up with the idea that we need to be thinking about maybe looking at different industries, attracting people to come visit you guys?
Well, it's really by default, I guess. My family and I, we aren't take vacations, and we stop at unique places and notice different things. And we was in a town out in Denver, Colorado, and my wife and daughter, we went to a little tea shop in a small town, and they really liked that tea shop and liked to bring that experience back to Casey. And I said, well, that would be awesome to do that. But, you know, with a town of 3,000, we would just be fighting over the same customers. So, I said, let's, if we're going to do this, let's try to think of a niche to get us, some people off the interstate. And, we have a family pipelining business where we work on pipelines and maintenance. So we're familiar with pipes. So, and I have wind chimes at home because they bring back fond memories, so I was listening to my wind chimes one night, and I just wondered what the world's largest wind chime was. So looked it up, and being a pipeline company, I said, well, we can top that. So we built the wind chime, put it by our tea shop, and opened them up, and we seen the traffic that was coming off the interstate.
Right, so this is I-70, right? And your wind chime,
correct.
Can you describe, I like how you've described the wind chime, but you haven't said how big it is. How large is this wind chime that you built? Your company is Bolin Enterprise LLC, but how this wind chime is actually not, it's not really small, is it?
Right, yeah. The world's largest wind chime before ours was, the longest tube on it was 27 foot long. The longest tube on our wind chime is 42 foot long, and with the framing that holds the wind chime and everything, it's 54 foot tall in the air.
So that's more than four stories, really. We're thinking,
yeah.
Wow. Okay, so we tweeted out a picture because we want everyone to see this. If you follow 21ST Show, you can see the picture of the world's largest wind chime. So, Jim, I imagine you thought we need to get Guinness World Records involved with this. That's always something that helps kind of have that title on there. How did you go about doing that?
Well, the first attempt was a wind chime, and we just looked up on the website and followed the instructions. We got a registration number to register it, and then they've got it step by step on the web, and we followed through with it. And the economic development person for Casey at that time helped me step through that, and we got it certified through Guinness. And I think it was November of 2011, I believe it was. But the crowd just kept coming, and that's when the switch kind of flipped in my head and thought, well, hey, we could probably do something here to help our small town.
How many people do you think have come to the town to visit? I don't know if you guys keep official records or what you've seen.
Well, in the state of Illinois, you have to have a guest book, and you have to obtain at least 5,000 signatures before you can get an attraction sign put on the interstate. So we put our guest book out the spring of that next year, 2012, and I'd say within probably 3 months, we had our 5,000 signatures. So we applied for the attraction signs for the interstate, and this last year, of course, that was 5 years ago, this last year, on Thursday, Fridays, and Saturdays, we're estimating between 500 to 700 people a day come through and look at the eight world largest or the Guinness Book records that we have in our town.
Wow. So before we get to the people and the economic impact of that, let's talk about all of the. So you have the world's largest wind chime. Can you tell me a little bit about the other world's largest items that you guys have come up with?
Yeah, the next one in line was the world's largest golf tee, because one of the guys that is the president of the golf course was trying to think of an idea to help, piggyback on the thing. So we thought of the golf tee, and so we built a golf tee, which is 30 foot tall. It's 6 foot across the top. It weighs 6,659 pounds, and it's solid wood.
And
So we
did you
changed
build
all the
all of that
carpet.
in Casey?
Yeah, right here at our shop. So we just work on them when our work slows down and we have an opportunity to work on it. We'll pull them out of the corner and dust them off and work on them for a little while. And then when we get busy, we put them back. But yeah, the next one after that would have been the knitting needle and a crochet hook, which I love to chainsaw carve as a hobby, as a passion, and that's how we made the first the second, third, and fourth one was that. And then after that was the rocking chair, which is 56 foot tall. It weighs about 48,600 pounds, and it sits across the road from the wind chime, and it's just a couple feet taller than it, so it's pretty massive.
And you actually had to crochet something with the crochet hooks to qualify for the world record, right?
Yeah, we have a little shop in town called the Yarn Studio. And it's Jeanette Huizenga runs it, so I made them and give them to her, and then she knitted a swath, and we videoed it and sent it into Guinness Book and got the world record on it.
And I wanted to bring someone else into the conversation, and it's Dave Liebenow, because inside he's the owner of Casey's Candy Depot, and inside Casey's Candy Depot is the world's largest wooden shoes. Hey, Dave, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us this morning.
Well, thanks for having me.
Now, how did the world's largest wooden shoes end up inside your candy store?
That's a story in itself. But Jim was taking me around showing his vision of all the items that he had built and was continuing to build, and took me into this building that was in the process of being restored by Jim and his team. And he had mentioned to me that he wanted to put the wooden shoes in here. And I said, "Oh, that's nice." And he said, "I think an antique store would be great here." And I said, "Jim, we really don't need another antique store. How about a candy store?" And at the time, I wasn't thinking of doing it myself because I was also working with another business here. My wife's family has a business here in town and was working for them. But the more I thought about it and the more I really saw Jim's vision and really understand tourism and the importance of tourism and how it can have a real positive economic impact on an area, I decided maybe it was my turn to do this. And something I've always wanted to do was have my own retail store. And so I decided to jump in with both feet and do it. And it's been great. And having the wooden shoes is a great draw for the store. And Jim and his team did a wonderful job building those shoes because they're huge.
How big are the shoes, Jim?
They're 12 foot long, 5 foot wide, and 5 foot tall, and they weigh about 2,500 pounds a piece. And they're big, and they're pretty. The guy's done a real good job finishing up. And Dave's store sits right behind the world's largest mailbox, which is 32 foot tall. Japan had the world's largest mailbox before the United States. We got it back here in the United States, and theirs held 2,300 cubic feet of mail, and the one in front of Dave's store there holds 5,800 cubic feet of mail.
Oh, right, because you can actually, it is a working mailbox. You can actually climb up the stairs, right? It's about four flights of stairs you climb up to put mail in that mailbox. Jim, let me ask you something, because Dave was talking about your vision. In 2014, the town of Kesey set out a comprehensive plan to work on economic growth. You were on the committee, and you said that one of the findings was that the town had, you know, and I think this happens with a lot of places where they've had decades or centuries of work of manufacturing and factories, and that's just been so much part of the culture of the town. How hard was it for people in Kesey to think about investing in tourism, or even just to get everybody an idea with your vision of, hey, we can bring people here? One thing we do have is we're at a crossroads between Indianapolis. Like, lots of people are coming by on 70. Maybe we can get them to stop here like I did when I was traveling. How hard was it to get everybody on board with that?
It's kind of difficult to get people out of the old mindset of that. And the thing about tourism and the town, you know, you have to have a lot of entrepreneurship, and Dave's a prime example of that. He went out and invested in his idea, and it's worked out well for him. So getting people to switch gears is was pretty tough, you know, and it's
how many years do you think
thing,
it took? But, yeah. How many years do you think it took before people started thinking, hey, maybe this is making a difference?
I think after the beginning of the third year of down this path, I think people started seeing the opportunities that was showing themselves around Kesey. Yeah,
Dave, what do you think?
I agree. I think, in fact, I think this past year has been, you know, every year since Jim's introduced the big items, we've seen a huge bump in tourism and the numbers just coming into town here. They're even still coming in today, which is amazing because, you know, typically tourism is during a summer season, basically. But even today when it's, you know, 32 degrees here, we still have people coming in the door that are stopping off the interstate because they saw a sign for a world's largest wind chime and didn't realize that we had seven other items here. And what they thought was a 20-minute stop turned into an hour and a half or 2 hours, and they're loving it.
And how much candy did they buy? And they hopefully they bought some candy, right, Dave?
Candy and all the other things that we have to offer here too. But that's just—it's just been phenomenal to watch. And just I opened up in May, and according, you know, I've way exceeded my business plan.
What was your business plan? What did you think? What did you think would happen?
Well, I'm actually in what was going to be my year one plan. I'm actually going to hit my year three plan, which is basically triple what I forecasted for the year one.
And is that for business, for sales?
Yes, that's for sales.
Okay.
And so it's just so I expanded my store immediately to there's a second floor in my store, which I was not going to do for another year, and I went and did it right away, and it's paying off. And Jim, you know, it's not only about the big things. It's how they're presented is also a real key factor. These are not just a rocking chair sitting in a parking lot. It's in a setting that is unbelievable with landscaping and the way it's presented and the way it's they're just a work of art in particular. Every one of the items that Jim and his team have put together, even in front of my store, I have a railroad theme, and they have, between landscaping and decorations and all that, have put railroad tracks in front of the store and have added a caboose and a flat car. So it's just how the whole thing is presented is really what's impressive to our visitors.
Well, and I think if, especially when you're talking about the presentation, Dave, I can imagine that lots of people are coming and there were social media, people taking pictures, sitting in the chair, posting mail. Do you feel like that helps keep the word out? Do you guys keep track of that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Just my Facebook alone has over 2,000 followers. And that's within the last, you know, 5 months, 6 months. So Social media has been a huge help through this. And I think it's, you know, every year it's more than double. And I can only imagine what this next summer will bring to the area. And I think, you know, when you were asking about people, if they're catching on or whatever, I'm sure they were hesitant at first. But I believe now they're seeing the benefit of it. And I think we're finding more local people wanting to invest in this community and opening up new shops. And so there have been new shops that have opened, and there's future ones coming next year. So
we're going to have to take a break. Yeah, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I just want to wrap up this conversation with you guys, hear a little bit more about other opportunities, other business development that's happening in Casey. We're talking about Casey, Illinois, and tourism there. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st. Thanks for tuning in to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We're talking about the East Central Illinois town of Casey, Illinois. They've got about 3,000 residents. We're talking about how they've turned to world's biggest items, to tourism, to help bring visitors to their town, especially after they've had two big manufacturing plants that have closed in the past decade. I'm talking to Jim Bolin, who is the president of Bolin Enterprises. He was on the Casey Comprehensive Plan Committee. It was his vision for these big things for their small town. Dave Liebenau is with us as well. He's the owner of Casey's Candy Depot, which is also home to the world's largest pair of wooden clogs. Dave, boy, you were right. Everybody's tweeting to 21st Show all of the pictures right now that they've taken in your town of the big items. So I know social media really does, I think, help you guys in terms of getting the word out. Do you feel like, and Jim, I guess one of the things is you probably are trying to do both kind of the old school of people just driving on a highway, seeing those attraction signs, and new social media. Do you feel like, are you trying to do any particular other outreach or marketing to get the word out about what you all have in Casey, Jim?
Well, the things that, like Dave said, is the social media. You know, we got TripAdvisors and all kinds of that kind of thing going out there. What's really helped us this last year, and it's really going to help us next year. We was featured in the 2017 Guinness Book, so 7 of our 8 items are pictured on page 100 in that book, and that's really brought, you know, because they put out worldwide commercials about the Guinness Book, and featured some of their commercials with us, and that's just brought a huge amount of people coming through. So,
Dave, just before the break, you were talking about how it's taken a couple of years. You all started this. Jim, you started this, what, back in 2011? It sounds like 2012 you really started working on all of this?
Right. Well, we put our first item out in 2011. We started on it 2 years before that, mm-hmm. building it. But yeah.
Dave, how do you think, I'm curious, you were saying, if we're looking at, you have a candy store, what other small businesses, what does it mean for Casey in terms of other small businesses that have now also sprung up around these attractions?
Well, that's what's making these businesses spring up. That's why I entered into this market, was looking at what the impact has been over the last couple of years with Jim's, with the big things coming up and the increase in traffic coming into this town. And so you see the opportunity. And even those existing businesses that have been here over the last 5-10 years have also seen huge growth because of this. So I think it's waking people up, and they're seeing the traffic, they're seeing the opportunity. There's empty buildings here that people are buying and fixing up and opening up their businesses. I think it's going to continue. And as Jim adds more items, which there are more things on the docket, so to speak, we tell our visitors here, you got to come back because there's more new stuff coming. And I think that's the other thing, is this is not just a one-time visit. These people will be coming back over and over again, and that's a huge benefit for us.
Jim, I quickly, we just have about a minute left, but I wonder what you would say to another community that's looking for, that's been in this, where you guys have been, and maybe looking for advice about how to change their town.
Well, the big thing is, no pun intended, but is, you know, small communities, we can't compete against the bigger town that can offer tax tax savings and, you know, different things to entice them to come to their town. You know, small towns just can't compete against that. So that's why we looked outside of that. And you just got to brand yourself as a different thing. And we've branded ourselves as a small town to where you can we're on the theme of a small town. You can bring your family. You can spend no money at all and go around and see the sights and walk the town and enjoy and set and visit. Or you can come and spend and eat and buy some things at the store and leave with a bag full of candy. So
yeah, I mean, thanks for that. Thanks for that. I want to thank Jim. Yeah, I want to thank Jim Bolin and Dave Libenow for joining us from KZ. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Appreciate you calling.
Let's get some more context now from Claire Bushy. She's the Illinois manufacturing reporter for Crane Chicago Business. We spoke with her earlier from Chicago. Claire, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thanks very much for having me.
We've been talking about how some towns are adjusting to losing manufacturing plants. That's something, of course, that's been going on for decades throughout Illinois. But just like a couple weeks ago in late October, you reported on two manufacturing plants that left Illinois from Wisconsin. What was the reason for these two plants leaving?
Well, it was different in each case, but certainly a large factor for both was Wisconsin rolled out the welcome mat. They gave both of them generous tax incentive packages, so that certainly didn't hurt.
Mm-hmm. And how much of did they say the fact that how much was Illinois' fiscal climate, workers' compensation, how many of those issues were cited by those companies when they left?
You know, it was a little bit different for each one. Colbert Packaging, which is one of the main suppliers for the Frango mint boxes, mm-hmm. The owner of that company said that the overall fiscal climate and somewhat zooey atmosphere for Illinois contributed to him wanting to move. But actually, on the specific issue of workers' comp, he said that that was not a main factor. It was maybe like 1% to 2% of his overall decision.
Mm-hmm.
And when it came to Vanco products, again, you know, workers' comp was not like by any means a deciding factor. It was sort of icing on the cake that his insurance would go down as well. But for him, actually, he had looked at sites in Illinois. He had wanted to grow at their current site in Lake Villa, but they weren't able to do it because of construction issues. So they looked in McHenry County, they looked elsewhere in Lake County, and in the end, Wisconsin put together a better deal. But they wanted to actually keep all their workers in Illinois, and so that's why they're in Wisconsin now, but they're just on the other side of the border.
Mm-hmm. So their workers can stay, right?
Cause exactly.
That's a big disruption. So, Claire, we're looking at what? Like 10,000 manufacturing jobs lost in the past 12 months. How much of that is because of factories closing down, and how much of that is issues like, what would you say are the biggest issues for manufacturers in the state of Illinois for staying open?
Well, I think that it's largely due to macroeconomic forces. And the 10,000 jobs you're talking about, Caterpillar is laying off that many people across their operations.
Mm-hmm.
Caterpillar can't sell as much of their equipment if commodity prices are in the tank because their customers are not digging as many things out of the ground. It's I think it's hard to argue that that is necessarily based on things happening specifically in Illinois. Same thing when it comes to Deere has been laying people off. And again, that's because their customers aren't buying as much of their equipment because prices for crops are not doing as well. And so, therefore, farmers are holding on to their equipment for longer and less likely to buy new.
So just when we're thinking about workers' comp, you know, it's something obviously Governor Rauner has talked a lot about. You hear the Illinois Manufacturers Association has made this. You hear over and over again how important reform of workers' comp is. What exactly do manufacturers want?
Well, manufacturers want their insurance rates to go down, but they actually have been going down for 20 years, which is the part that I think always gets left out of this conversation. They have not gone down as much as they have, though, in the rest of the nation. And there are a lot of people who would argue that that is because we're engaged as a country in a race to the bottom to undercut protections for workers, and that Illinois is more of a holdout in terms of still offering a level of benefit that is not available to workers, say, just over the line in Indiana.
Wisconsin?
Or Wisconsin. And Indiana stands out because it has some of the lowest workers' compensation rates in the country. So manufacturers would like that to be less expensive.
And as you say, so it's gone down over the past 20 years. How much, and I don't know, how much does this actually cost companies? How significant a cost is this?
I think it's in Illinois, $1.87 per $100 of payroll. And in Indiana, I want to say it's like $106.
Oh, so that's a pretty significant difference then.
Oh yeah. It's a large difference. The question is, you know, what do you define as sufficient for the people who actually work and the people who actually might, you know, lose a thumb because it's cut off?
So I wanted to ask, Claire, when you're talking about macroeconomic forces, obviously there's, there's the global economy, as you're talking about, especially sales for Deere and Caterpillar, those multinational companies. But what are we looking at in terms of Illinois? How much is Illinois losing jobs compared to other manufacturing in the Midwest?
Yes, certainly Illinois is doing worse than Michigan and Indiana and Ohio. And that is something that the Illinois Manufacturers Association has been sounding the alarm on. And they partly that is because the things that we make in Illinois are different from some of those states. The auto industry has been doing very well since they came out of the recession. And we have some of that work in Illinois, but we don't have as much of it as some of our Midwestern neighbors. And so we're a little bit different in terms of how we fare. But
why is that?
Because a large part of what we make is machinery and equipment, so Caterpillar and Deere being the two big ones.
Mm-hmm. And so how do you think overall, like especially when we're talking about Caterpillar, you were mentioning Caterpillar struggling this year. Now, I also know that their stocks got a little bit of boost after the election of Donald Trump, who's been talking about increasing infrastructure spending across the country. Of course, we had news last week of his intervention in Indiana, keeping 1,000 jobs at one air conditioning carrier, a heating and air conditioning company, cooling company in Indiana. Do you think the picture for Illinois' manufacturing plants has actually gotten a little brighter with the election of Donald Trump being the next president?
Certainly, Cats and Deere stock have gone up. They're doing very well at the moment, better than they've done in a while. And infrastructure, a big infrastructure package would be very good for Cat and good for Deere as well. And how that actually gets put together by the new administration and if it in fact comes together, because the President-elect Trump has talked about doing that as like a public-private partnership in which private entities would actually put up the money in exchange for tax credits. So whether it actually all comes together remains to be seen. But certainly if we're going to start heavily investing in infrastructure, that would be good for two big companies in Illinois.
Claire, earlier we were talking about how one town was handled the loss of its local manufacturing employers. And if you're just joining our conversation, we were talking to residents in Casey, Illinois, where they've worked on being a tourism draw, drawing in people with the Guinness World Records for the world's largest items, which is, I think, a unique case for maybe an old manufacturing town. I wonder how you're seeing other small towns deal with situations like this where the main employer leaves town. What have you seen across Illinois?
I have not seen as many creative responses to that as you probably have.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really hard to replace.
Well, right. And I'm even, what about the Chicago suburbs? I mean, because I know that when you think about different suburbs in the Chicago area and you look at how suburbs are also, I mean, suburbs even are competing with other suburbs for sometimes for these jobs, right? I mean, how do you think, how are you seeing different local governments handle this?
Well, I see more of people trying to retrain for the manufacturing that we actually still do have here, and people more of an emphasis on CNC machining and training people to be able to have jobs that are reflect more the more technological side that has become important in manufacturing. There's an excellent operation in Skokie, for example, called Symbol Training Institute that works on trying to get people with the skills that they actually need to fill the jobs that manufacturers do still have available here.
And do you think that one thing you often hear from manufacturing employers is the need for folks to have CNC training and the need for looking for skilled workers at that kind of medium level, workers who are good, have proficient enough math and science skills to go into learning advanced manufacturing technology? Are we still seeing a gap in that? Are we still not seeing enough of those workers in Illinois?
Certainly, that's what manufacturers are telling me. There's a gap in what people, the skills that people have, and people wanting to actually go into manufacturing jobs. And so, there's fewer people entering the industries, and so they are having a hard time actually filling some of those jobs because people don't really seem to want to take them, and then you have you don't have people entering the pipeline. And so, there's definitely still a gap.
Right. There's just sort of the skills mismatch. And I guess my last question is really then, do you feel that especially when we're thinking about manufacturing, we're thinking about sort of the old manufacturing workers and sort of new manufacturing. Do you really feel like when we're talking about manufacturing, this is almost a case of two Illinois, whether it's advanced manufacturing or those people who don't have those skills or the jobs that are in Chicago versus the rest of the state? Do you think that's an accurate description?
Yes, I think it is. And I'm not exactly sure what the solution is, but I think that that is, I think that it's definitely a problem that the state is facing.
Claire Bushey covers Illinois manufacturing for Crane Chicago Business, joining us from Chicago. Claire, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Stay tuned. Coming up next, we're going to continue to talk about the economy, about the state budget. A new web series that's looking at people impacted by the fiscal crisis is called Stranded by the State. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st.